Now I will introduce our speaker for today who will do the rest of the program. Jeanette Liardi is a writer, editor, and community educator who holds a master's degree with honors in English from Rutgers University and a graduate degree in gerontology from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. A national blogger on aging issues, she has been on the staff of Newsweek, Life, People, Condé Nast Traveler, and Sesame Street magazines, and the Charlotte Observer. She gives presentations and workshops in journaling, spiritual writing, memoir writing, personal myth-making, brain fitness, and caregiver support to students ranging from teenagers to centenarians. AAUU for 25 years, Jeanette has led services for congregations in North and South Carolina, as well as in the Portland area, at the Vancouver East Rose, Wye East, and Washington County churches. This is her fifth visit to our congregation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's always a pleasure to come here. Every time I come here, there's beautiful, incredible art on the walls. I love this. And I loved your sing-alongs. I thought that was awesome. And I learned a new word today, Wooferian. Welcome to all you Wooferians today. Our first reading, we have two short readings. Our first reading is from the writings of Rabbi Hillel more than 2,000 years ago. If I am not for myself, who will be for me? If I am only for myself, what am I? If not now, when? Our second reading is from the biblical book of Genesis, chapter 32. And Jacob rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his children and passed over the ford called Jabbok. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that which he had. And Jacob was left alone. And there a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. And when the man saw that he prevailed not against Jacob, he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh, and Jacob's thigh was put out of joint as the man wrestled with him. And the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." And Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And the man said, "What is your name?" And he replied, "Jacob." And the man said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men, and you have prevailed." And Jacob asked him, "Tell me, what is your name?" And he replied, "Why do you want to know my name?" And he blessed Jacob. And Jacob called the name of that place Peniel, which means the face of God, because he said, "I have seen God face to face and have survived." And as Jacob passed through Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he limped on his hip. Sometimes, I suppose, when awe is not an integral part of one's daily life, it takes an awesome moment to jumpstart the consciousness of it. That moment happened for me 20 years ago. I was working out at the YMCA, something that I must confess I detested doing after a year of semi-dedication. Sure, I had lost about 30 pounds and was in the best shape of my life, but the thrill of victory had long since metamorphosed into the agony of defeat. Psychologically, I was in a rut, depressed about the fact that I finally realized my exercise routine had become a major lifestyle commitment that I'd have to endure for the rest of my days. So I was not a happy camper that morning as I sweated and groaned on the weight training equipment. It was then that a woman two machines down from me caught my eye. She was slim and about my height and age, with pixie-like gray hair perched atop gentle blue eyes, which set off a Mona Lisa kind of smile. I'd seen her working out many times before, I guess we had the same window of opportunity in our schedules. And we had nodded cordially to each other on more than several occasions. But on this day, there was something about her face, that held my attention. She was a stranger, and yet I couldn't help thinking that I knew something very basic about her. Her expression radiated a kind of openness, and yet inner-centeredness, at once inviting and at the same time quite private. I envied the composure and ease with which she tackled her routine, and I began to make assumptions about her character and occupation. Surely she must be in some sort of nurturing profession, I thought, a psychotherapist perhaps, or a minister, or a teacher, or a physician, or nurse. Furthermore, she must be happily partnered with a great person, and maybe even have a couple of adorable kids. In short, here was a lady who had it all together. Well, she soon finished her workout while I grudgingly continued mine, but the mystery of that stranger wouldn't let me go. I decided that the next time I'd see her, I'd summon up the courage to ask her if my speculations about her were true. As it turned out, the opportunity arose sooner than I thought. When I returned to the locker room and was about to take my shower, I saw her, already dressed, gathering her things and getting ready to leave. I pulled together whatever grace and dignity one could when wrapped in a towel and approached her. God, I thought, I hope whatever I say won't sound like a pickup line, but I just have to find out how it is that she's so content. So I asked her, "Excuse me, I hope you don't mind me asking you, but are you a therapist or minister or someone else who's devoted to helping people?" There was a pause. All at once, her smile melted as though I'd suddenly shown a hot light in her face. Tears came to her eyes, and she immediately cast a glance down at the floor. "Who, me?" she said. I'm a nobody. Embarrassment and humiliation doubled her over as if I had just kicked her in the gut. She quickly gathered her things and left the gym. I was stunned. I didn't see it coming. I hurt, too, from the blow of her response, for I never meant to cause her such pain. I never saw her again. I was never able to apologize or even explain. What happened in that moment awed me. The exchange haunted me for months as I tried to make sense of it. How could this woman who seemed so at peace on the outside feel so little self-esteem that such a seemingly innocuous question could throw her off balance, leaving her wounded in the process? And what was it that I saw or didn't see in her face that led me to make such a mistake in judgment? I since realized there's another reason why that encounter affected me so deeply. At times in my life, it's been my experience that I'd establish a friendship or intimate relationship that I thought was stable and mutually satisfying, only to find it crumble during a time when I was gripped by personal struggle or trauma. On more than one occasion, I felt abandoned precisely when I needed strong emotional support. And each time, I was left bitter and deeply judgmental. You see, what threw me in each relationship was the same feeling of disorientation and disillusionment I felt at the Y. The reality I thought I had a handle on, the person I thought I knew and whom I thought knew me, had unpredictably changed into a different personality. And that hurt. As it turns out, in every one of those relationships, it was a mutual situation of each of us not seeing or accepting the other for who he or she was, either at the moment of change or even from the very outset. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever had an expectation of someone that was suddenly shattered or ultimately unfulfilled? And while you're reflecting on this, let me turn the mirror around and ask you, have you ever felt misunderstood and misjudged by another person because you were not accepted for who you are? Like the encounter at the Y for me, such moments of disillusionment can fill us with awe when we can't find a clear explanation for them. Or rather, we may sense that there's an explanation out there somewhere, but it eludes us. We recognize our own limited perception, and we are humbled. Instead of getting clarity about the other person, such moments of struggle bring a clarity about ourselves. Perhaps the very person who disillusions us is really holding up a mirror, reflecting back to us the illusions we have about ourselves. As wounding as that can be, it is also a gift. I'll even go a step further and say that such reflection is a blessing, for it can rouse us from an unconscious state of pseudo-certainty and awaken us to awe. At this point, I should explain what I mean by awe. I looked up the word in several dictionaries, and their various definitions can be summed up by two words. The first is wonder, and I think that's how most of us might define the term. We've all experienced incredible moments of wonder. A wonderful sunrise or sunset, or meteor shower, or the birth of a child, or a glorious piece of music that leaves us breathless. But the second meaning of awe is dread, a fear of the unknown, of being overpowered by an unmanageable force. Anyone who's experienced an earthquake, tornado, epidemic, war, or other extreme natural or human-made disaster knows the feeling all too well. Wonder and dread. To me, these are forms of emotion that span a spectrum with love at one extreme and fear at the other. My personal experience is beginning to show me that awe, instead of being either wonder or dread, is rather the dynamic tension between the two. Awe is the precursor of reverence. It is the source of passion and creativity. And what I have learned rather painfully is that awe is the place where empathy, forgiveness, and self-renewal begin. I realize I'm talking in abstractions here, so let me illustrate what I mean with a story, the metaphorical story of Jacob. Now, Jacob isn't your Charlton Heston type of biblical hero. To put it plainly, he's a liar and a cheat. His name has several meanings. One is heel grasper, for it is said that when he and his twin brother Esau were born, Jacob emerged moments after Esau clutching at the heel of his older brother. Jacob's name also means supplanter, and he lived up to that title too. For he supplanted Esau by taking advantage of him, persuading his older twin in a moment of Esau's extreme hunger to trade his birthright for a bowl of soup that Jacob had made. Jacob further cheated his brother by dressing up in furry animal skins to mimic Esau's hairiness and fooling their old blind father Isaac into giving him the patriarchal blessing due to the firstborn son. For his actions, Jacob paid a price. To avoid his brother's wrath, Jacob fled his homeland and labored long and hard in the household of his uncle Laban, during which time he married two of Laban's daughters, fathered 12 sons and one daughter by his wives and their maidservants, and acquired numerous flocks and other goods, again through a series of deceptions and counter-deceptions. After 20 years, Jacob is told by an angel of God to return to his homeland and claim the inheritance of Isaac. That means Jacob has to confront Esau. Jacob has no idea how Esau will receive him after all this time. For the sake of his own survival, he's got to know, and so he sends a messenger to his brother telling of his imminent return. The messenger reports back to Jacob that Esau is coming to greet him with an army of 400 men. So that's the situation on that night by the ford called Jabbok. Jacob is dreading the meeting with Esau that will occur the next day. After sending his family and goods ahead of him, perhaps as a consciously calculated gesture of appeasement, he remains alone to ponder his fate. And all of a sudden, a strange man is there, and they wrestle. Who is this guy? Why do they begin to wrestle? I think it's very telling that no explanation is given. He's just there, and they engage in combat. A lot like life, I'd say. for we never know whom or what we will encounter from moment to moment. And the strangeness and suddenness of experience can grab us and force us into dealing with it. So Jacob and the man go at it. They struggle all night long until it is nearly dawn. Sometimes conflict takes a long time to resolve. And when the man realizes Jacob isn't about to give up, he puts Jacob's hip out of joint with a mere touch of his finger. Whoa, this is no ordinary man. This is some kind of supernatural being, and Jacob is aware of it too. Jacob is no fool. He knows the danger that awaits him the next day. He decides he needs all the help he can get. Wounded or not, he is not about to let go until he receives a blessing from this being. And a fascinating thing happens. Jacob gets a new name, a new identity. No longer is he someone defined by the role of following in someone's tracks or trying to acquire what isn't his. He becomes Israel, he who has struggled with God and men and has survived. Struggled with God? Could this supernatural being be divinity itself? This Jacob has got to know, so he asks, but the answer he receives is cryptic. Why do you want to know my name? Could it be that this too is a situation which someone who has changed identity right before one's eyes is holding up a mirror, showing Jacob who he really is? Ultimately, does it really matter with whom Jacob has struggled? Or rather, is it more important that Jacob's identity is refined and redefined as a result of the conflict? Jacob gets his blessing, but the price is a wound. He limps away from that place, which he now calls Peniel, the face of God. For Jacob knows that what has taken place in that long, dark night of his soul before he has to meet his brother has been an awesome experience. Indeed, the awesomeness of the experience is so great, Jacob concludes that his adversary was God. He has seen God face to face, and that expression means more than it sounds. In the Hebrew text of this passage, Peniel is the first reference of the place. But upon a second reference, it is called Penuel, a shift of one vowel sound, but very significant. You see, in Hebrew, the shift in vowel is also a shift in pronoun. Peniel refers to the face of God in the first person, my face. Penuel means his face. Jacob has seen divinity in two directions, outward in the other's face and inward in his own. That is the nature of awe. For awe must be experienced in two directions. It must be felt toward the great and the small, the macrocosm and the microcosm, the sublime and the mundane, the other and the self, in order for it to be the blessing that it is. But what happens if a person has awe for himself or herself, but not for anyone or anything else? I think we've all known such people. They are arrogant, self-righteous, mean-spirited, and rigidly judgmental. And what about those who are in awe of everything and everyone but themselves? They are indecisive, directionless, self-denying, and lacking in self-esteem. Rabbi Hillel's words written 2,000 years ago are as vital today as ever. If I am not for myself, who will be for me? If I am only for myself, what am I? As you may know, the Hindus of India have a wonderful word they use upon greeting another person. They say, Namaste, which roughly means the divine in me greets the divine in you. I find that incredibly moving. For if, by definition, one assumes that divinity dwells within and beyond, then reverence, acceptance, and unconditional love must surely follow. I don't know about you, but I am more and more attracted to people who possess this two-way sense of awe. They have a healthy awe for themselves, as well as awe not just for other people, but for other cultures, other beliefs, other creatures of the earth, and the earth itself. I want to be around such people who possess childlike, passionate souls, who are present and in awe of everything. I've come to realize that my spiritual energy gets depleted around these one-way types who fail to see or believe in the immense, indeed infinite potential of themselves and of all things, and who believe that they know the whole truth about something, that they see the whole picture, where in reality, at most, they may see only half. And just as important, I want to be such a person who cultivates within my being a daily consciousness of awe, and not just for the big things, the tornadoes, the sunsets, the births of babies, but for the little things, a falling snowflake, a kind word, welcome rest at the end of the day. It's a challenge, I admit, but it's one I'm committed to. All of this is not to say that one must go through life without values or judgments or without holding oneself or others accountable for their actions. Quite the contrary. Those conflicts, those struggles, those unexpected moments when we wrestle with and test our values are opportunities for self-definition and redefinition. How do I feel about someone's unethical behavior? How do I cope with sudden and inexplicable betrayal, rejection, or abandonment? For me, the answer lies in a belief that everyone is divine by nature. Everyone has a soul. And it is neither my privilege nor my place to know the agenda of another soul. Instead, it is my obligation to discover and create the agenda of my own. I must come to terms with the fact that I'll never know the whole truth about any encounter or experience in my life. I can never know completely the past experiences and present motivations of another soul. Therefore, I cannot judge the person, but I can judge the action. I can decide whether or not to work out a conflict with someone to the best of my ability and satisfaction without compromising my values. I can also decide whether or not to continue or alter or terminate my relationship with that person. I can act with integrity. I can bless that person and move on. For we are all Israel. We struggle with the God in us and the God in others every day. That is our identity as humans. And being human, we are simultaneously wounded and blessed. I never again met that woman at the Y, but it's my heart's profound desire that on some level her soul has revealed to her that not only was she not a nobody, for everyone is a somebody, but that during one very special encounter at least, she showed another struggling human being the face of divinity and left that individual redefined and blessed with the spiritual gift of conscious awe. Her story and Jacob's story are now yours. What lessons will you take from them? Will you meet every moment with a sense of awe? Will you see the infinite potential in yourself and others and the infinite possibility in each opportunity that presents itself to you? Will this be the day you jumpstart your consciousness and embrace the spiritual blessing of awe that is your birthright? If not now, when?